Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
I don't think there's one way to do it, for sure. I know that as my children grew up, I felt my artistic excitement sort of be pent up, you know? And I think after a number of years, I'm just so excited now to be able to do it in the way that I want to do it. Not just because of children, but because of a lot of other factors that I do whatever it takes to keep me focused. And yeah, it brings me a lot of joy and fulfillment, and it's who I am. So I try my best.
Oh, friends, I am so honored to welcome Suchitra Mattai to the Artist Mother Podcast today. Suchitra received an MFA in painting and drawing and an MA in South Asian art, both from the University of Pennsylvania. Her work has been exhibited worldwide and has appeared in various online and print publications such as Hyperallergic, Cultured Magazine, Harper's Bazaar Arabia, and New American Paintings, among many others. Some of her recent and upcoming projects include a commissioned project for the Sargai Biennial 14, the State of the Art Show 2020 at the Crystal Bridges Museum, an installation sponsored by the Denver Art Museum, and many more big projects. Suchitra lives in Denver with her husband and two sons, and I'm just so delighted that you're here to talk with me and share a bit about your life and your work, Suchitra. Thank you so much for being on the Artist Mother Podcast.
Thank you so much, Kaylin, for having me. I'm really excited to chat with you.
Yes, thank you. Okay, so I always like to have our artists point us back to something in their childhood that connects them to their life as an artist today. Do you remember, you know, doing art as a kid outside of the normal, like, color and stuff like that? But just wondering if you've always wanted to be an artist. Was art always a part of your life?
Yes, most certainly. So I was born in Guyana, South America, and one of my earliest memories there, we moved to Nova Scotia when I was in elementary school, but one of my earliest memories in Guyana was playing in the gardens and having all of this very sort of lush, magical terrain around me. Mm. And because we left when I was young, I think there's a certain kind of not just nostalgia, but excitement and curiosity that's generated for me with landscape. Mm. And so, you know, a lot of my art making at first really had to do with landscape and place. And as I began to evolve, I think that, you know, even though some of my work is different now, that still plays a really big part in my practice. So that sense of curiosity about place, I guess.
Mm, that's interesting. And I'm not wanting to dive too much into this right now, but I can't help myself because I was just reading a book and it was talking about like joy and what sparks happiness in people. And one of the things that she mentions is lush tropical climates, like where there's just a lot of stimulating things to look at, a lot of plants and animals and, yes. You know, like, so I just like that just connected for me, like, and seeing, you know, some of your work, how you have this like tropical vibe in a lot of your paintings. It makes sense that, you know, that childhood in that environment really was stimulating for you.
Most definitely. I think, you know, there's two parts to it. On one level, every time I've ever gone back or visited somewhere that's tropical, I always have that sense of joy, like that you're talking about. And I don't always know if it's specific, you know, to me, you know, based on what you're saying, there is just this sense of overwhelming joy that comes with green and lush, et cetera. But in my work, I feel like that tropical scape plays sort of two roles. you know, on one level, it's about memory and history. On another level, it's a way of kind of maybe deconstructing that colonial narrative by using those prints. So there's kind of a huge role, I guess, that the landscape, the tropical landscape, does play. But joy is definitely a part of it.
Definitely. And we'll talk more about that, deconstructing colonialism, and we'll get into some of that later on for sure. Okay, if somebody listening to this podcast is crazy enough to not know your work and not know what it looks like, I was wondering if you could describe it for that listener who maybe has never had the pleasure of viewing it. You work in many different mediums, but what do you feel like is some of the signature things that your work looks like?
That's a great question. So I, you know, through my career, painting and drawing has sort of been central to my work. That's what I studied, and that's how I conceived of myself for a really long time. I think now, especially in the last 5 years, my work has really grown to include sort of mixed media practices. Fiber is a huge part of my work. Sculpture, video, collage. And so my work really ranges from in scale, in texture, in color, basically in form. I think the way it's united, all of those things, is through the conceptual element, which is, you know, and we can talk about this later, but in terms of, yeah, just in terms of formally, you know, you can expect a wide range of materials and textures.
Okay. And so how did that develop? Like, how did your process develop to be something that is so wide ranging and includes so many materials? I'm interested to hear, like, I know you went to art school. It said, you know, I read in your bio, you have an MFA. And I'm just curious to hear, like, how this sort of developed over time for you to have all this depth and breadth to your the mediums that you work in.
So I, you know, obviously in school you learn a lot of different mediums, you hone those materials and mediums. But really it's been in the last 5 years that I've permitted myself, I guess, allowed myself to kind of really delve into some of the practices that I've known for a long time, but just never had maybe the courage to allow to enter my work. Mm. So I grew up, you know, crocheting and sewing. I learned all of these things, embroidery, from my grandmothers and my mother, and we would do this together. But I never, I guess I always saw my art practice and those practices as maybe separate. Mm. In grad school, that was the first moment when I joined them. I remember doing some small embroidery, kind of laser fabric pieces. But then I sort of set it aside for a long time. And when I brought it back, I really brought it back. Mm. And when I allowed myself sort of that, you know, that sort of like, well, it's important to me to bring this in, I really just kind of went all out. And as I started, first it was fiber and video. And then, you know, I started using a lot of found objects in my work. And there are no limits to found objects. So, you know, a lot of them for me, you know, have a relation to either the domestic or to history, the ones I use. But again, you know, I really allow the conceptual framework to lead me. And so the materials, I really feel like nothing is off limits. Mm.
What was that first piece that you made that, like, was your commitment to turning, you know, back into bringing back some of these domestic textiles and things that you had already learned in your childhood, like, back to your work?
You know, I there are two works that I can remember. One, I created a mixed media piece work from a found vintage macrame, and it was pretty large scale. But I wove, you know, fabric and ribbon and all sorts of cords into the macrame and created a landscape. And then I used drawing to continue the landscape, through on the wall. Mm. And so basically the landscape was continuous through these different materials. And it's that work that really, it was for a show on contemporary drawing. And I really saw it as a drawing. And I guess that's when, you know, that kind of initiated the whole sort of material exploration. Mm.
Love that. Thank you so much for sharing.
Of course.
And okay, so now your work is kind of, you know, gone up in scale, and in particular, some of the fabric-based pieces, like I'm thinking of the Indian sari, the large textile pieces that are sculptural now, really. Mm-hmm. So how did you begin, like, working on those and, picking up the sari? And are all of those found, or are you collecting them? Or, just interested to hear about the process of you making those pieces.
Oh, of course. So the first sari tapestries that I made were for the Sharjah Biennial. And so that was that biennial was last year, so 2019. And I knew about it the year before. So I came up with my idea, and it was the first time I actually used the saris as a medium. And the piece was called Imperfect Isometry, and it was really about how politics, the spheres of politics, the social and the individual overlap. And so I started, I did a site visit to Sharjah, which is in the United Arab Emirates. Mm. And there's a large South Asian population there. And I kind of found this interesting connection. And I decided I would use the saris from there, from India, and from my own family. So my mom would give me saris from her friends and our family, and I would weave them with other saris from different parts of the Indian diaspora. And so for me, it was a way of connecting these women, over time. And so that was my first use of the material. Since then, I have been, I have them, I have a source in India, but I always try to combine them with ones that people give me. One of the best things about using found materials is that people actually will drop things off for me. Friends will give me things. Strangers will just drop off saris
on my doorstep. Yes, I love that.
It's amazing. So, all of these tapestries have saris from multiple sources.
Mm, that's so interesting. Like, I wonder what the word is on the street. Hey, there's this artist that she just wants.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, like how are they communicating that? I love that.
It's funny. I've gotten them from, just different ways, via social media, but also other ways, just word of mouth. So,
okay. So I want to talk a little bit about this idea of labor. And, I know your work speaks a lot about the visibility of labor, of women of color in the art world, of, immigrants and people in our country in the United States who maybe are underrepresented or underappreciated or undervalued. And I was wondering if you could just talk a little bit about, the way that you are conceptualizing these big ideas and sort of breaking them down in your work, and why does this feel like the moment for you to do that? Why do these things feel personal enough to you that you want to make work about this?
Well, so there are many levels to this.
Yes, big question.
So, it's a great question because, for me, there's a history of my family that sort of at the core of it, I think. My great-grandparents and one of my grandparents were indentured laborers from India who were brought to Guyana, South America, as indentured laborers to work the sugar plantations. Mm. And so when slavery ended in, I guess, like the mid-1800s in the Caribbean, the European colonists basically needed a labor force. And that's, the British looked to their biggest colony, which was India. So my family is all from, they're all from Guyana, which is culturally sort of Caribbean in nature, mm-hmm. but physically on the continent of South America. And so that's the root of these kind of this interest. So I've done a lot of research on that period in terms of, you know, indentured labor, but I also look to labor, you know, around the world. But the whole idea for me is by kind of seeking out these personal narratives, it's mm-hmm. a way of taking apart to reimagine, I guess, that historical narrative that we're so used to in the West. And, you know, you mentioned that, you know, I'm interested in giving voice to people who were never included in that, in those narratives, in that sort of Western canon of art, of history and art history. So a lot of my work takes the personal and then uses it as a means for dialogue about the present and mm-hmm. about the contemporary. And I think in our contemporary world right now, there's a lot of, you know, sort of racial unrest, mm-hmm. a lot of awakenings, let's say. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, that has sort of fueled my fire in a way, in terms of the, and, you know, in terms of my conceptual framework and practice. Hmm.
Thank you so much. Do you feel like your specific experience of motherhood has influenced any of the work that you make? You know, and I think motherhood is one of those topics where we can talk about unseen labor very, very easily.
Yes, indeed.
So I'm kind of asking the question in a pointed way, but I'm just wondering about your own experience of motherhood and, you know, do you feel like it's enriched sort of your vision of your work being about labor and visibility?
Yes. Well, I mean, labor in the domestic is, you know, unseen, right? In that way. And I think, you know, that's why in a lot of my work, I focus on figures of, female figures mm-hmm. and women's stories and domestic practices and domestic materials and craft materials, because, you know, of that very reason. As my, you know, in terms of my own personal experience, so much of, my experiences have come into my work. In one recent example of this, I just finished an exhibition called, a solo exhibition called Innocence and Everything After. Mm. And in it, you know, I was suggesting that we basically return, you know, to a state of childhood innocence because in that state, we're more open-minded. But I was thinking back to my own children and, you know, what it, you know, obviously, having children, we're so close to that stage, right? I mean, my children are a little older, but it's still in my memory when they're learning and everything is new. But the idea was to, you know, basically return to that conceptual place so that we could reformulate the way we think about, you know, current events and a lot of what's going on in our country. Mm. And one of the pieces that I made for that show, I took, you know, it's during COVID and I use a lot of found materials, but I couldn't find materials.
Right.
So I was using a lot of, and I wasn't going to my studio. So I was looking at a lot of materials that were just around that I had in the basement, in my garage. And so I found this box of clothing that I had forgotten I had saved of my children's clothing from when they were, you know, 3 and 5 and, you know, young. Mm-hmm. And I used those clothes to make a large scale work that actually has the title of the exhibition, Innocence and Everything After. Mm. And it actually includes their silhouette. So whenever they see it, they're like, oh, that's us.
Yeah.
So much of what, you know, and I remember making work too about being pregnant. You know, so much of being a mother, you know, whether it's specific or not, you know, or easy to spot or not, it's always there. There's sort of a, you know, a lingering sort of commitment that's in the back of your mind that's always part of your practice.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, well, first I want to say that show is stunning. I'm going to make sure we link to, there's a gallery walkthrough on YouTube from K Contemporary Gallery. And like, I just so wish I could see that show in person. It is so beautiful, Suchitra. Yes. Oh my gosh.
Thank you so much.
Again, it looks like a group show because of the variety of the work that you have. It's just incredible. Like, you know, from paintings to like sculptures, and it's just amazing. So, yeah, I just think that show is incredible. So that show happened during COVID.
Yes.
Like it opened during COVID.
It opened during COVID. And it just came down literally today.
Oh, wow. Okay.
it's interesting because sometimes I worry about the group show element. So, you know, I think
it's very cohesive. I did not mean cohesive. Yeah. No,
but it's something I think about too, you know. I think at one point turned to my gallerist and they said, it looks like a group show. So I totally understand that. And, you know, I think everyone just thinks in different mediums. And I feel as though, you know, I mentioned this before, but once you open it up, you know, I studied so many different mediums, college, post-college, and I trained myself in different mediums. And I feel as though it's how I think through ideas. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I love that. And yeah. I think it's hard to do so many mediums well. And I don't know, it just takes like a really skilled and focused artist, I think, you know, to do it in the way that you do and at the scale that you do. So I'm like blown away by your work. I did not mean that as an insult to say it's a group show.
No, of course. No. I just, it's a hard thing to explain because I think there are a lot of artists that work in different mediums, but I feel as though whenever you do, it is, you know, it's a challenge to kind of, not just to put it together, but for people to kind of see the connections maybe.
Yeah. And maybe, you know, I think there's this like misconception that an artist is like a master of one thing, you know, like like the jack of all trades is kind of like a, you know, like a term that we don't really want, you know, to be associated with. We would rather be, you know, like the master of painting or whatever. Right. So, but I think that's an outdated way to think about it. Most of the artists that I totally admire work in multiple mediums, and that's one of the things I just love about them. So I think it's amazing. And I think, I mean, pretty much every artist that I've interviewed, you know, they end up working in a different medium when their kids are young. Like, or they somehow change their practice to, you know, fit into the early stages of motherhood. Was there any connection with that for you?
Yes, most definitely. I think, you know, it's challenging to be an artist and a mother. Mm-hmm. And when I was, when my children were very young, I still needed to make things, but everything was on a different scale. So, and everything that I made was two-dimensional and on paper mostly. I didn't have a studio, and I basically would stay up and work. And I think, if anything, when I think back to that time, it really was a matter of smaller sort of works on paper, which is working out ideas and I guess knowing, knowing that it would be different another time.
And now your boys are teenagers, right?
One of them is 15 and one is 12.
15 and 12. Okay. So what's it been like to shift to this different phase of parenting where maybe you're not doing as much like physical labor and your time might not be consumed, but maybe, you know, like my oldest is 8 and I can already see that there's a different sort of emotional labor that comes with having older children. And sometimes I'm like, am I ever gonna You know, I might have more time to work in the studio, but my brain is just going to be more full of like all of the things. So is it ever going to like clear out? So, you know?
No.
There's no hope.
No. I'm only kidding. I think what happened for me, it's always there, right? There are so many challenges as children become older. You know, for me, I worry about my 15-year-old being able to take care of himself when he goes to college in 3 years. And, you know, I mean, there's all sorts of things. And of course, they become, you know, more contentious as they get older. There's a certain kind of, you know, obviously period of teenagedom that's yes. challenging. But one thing I have learned, and I think it's a hard thing to do. It took me some time, but it's to just, when I'm in my studio, I'm able to focus. When I start working, I'm able to focus and I put everything aside. And it was a real challenge to come to that acceptance and to kind of figure out how to do that, because it for me, it's totally necessary. It's hard. It's really hard to focus on your work when you're worried about your children. And it's a hard thing to just put that aside. But I think, I don't really know how I did it, but I'm able to put it aside, you know, do my work and then go back to it. Mm. And I think that's been sort of my saving grace as it is.
Yeah, I think a focused commitment to the work is necessary, you know, and it's like one of the only ways to get through and just do it, like you're saying. But you know, it takes a lot to get to that point.
Yes.
And I guess it's probably different things for different people, you know, different ways that we structure our lives and different mechanisms that we use to find that clarity, I guess.
And I don't think there's one way to do it, for sure. I know that as my children grew up, I felt my artistic excitement sort of be pent up, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think after a number of years, I'm just so excited now to be able to do it in the way that I want to do it. Mm. Not just because of children, but because of a lot of other factors that I do whatever it takes to keep me focused. And yeah, it brings me a lot of joy and fulfillment. And it's who I am. So I try my best.
I love that image of like just the excitement and the energy sort of building when you're in young motherhood. And then, you know, maybe eventually we can, I don't know, blow the top off, you know, and go crazy. Like
I think that's
really a really hopeful image.
It is. And I think it's true. I think it's doable. I think it's doable for everybody. And I know it was frustrating, you know, in young motherhood sometimes, even though, you know, I have no regrets, but it was, you know, it's often frustrating not sleeping, not being able to, commit to any one project. But I think that's part of the joy for me now, that whole, I see my practice as one of experimentation, and I've used that word before. And sometimes people take it to mean, you know, you just don't have it figured out as yet. But to me, if you're not experimenting forever, you're like quenching that curiosity, you know, like you're kind of, you need that curiosity. To me, experimentation kind of, part of the equation for that is that curiosity, right?
Yeah, it's part of the identity of an artist.
Exactly. And if you have it figured out, you know, it's not fun anymore.
Right. So. Yeah. I love that. Do you, when your kids were young, were you already a full-time artist? Like, were you practicing, you know, art on the side of another job? Like, how did that work in terms of just structuring your life?
So I taught on and off college for about 12 years.
Okay.
And so when they were really, really young, I took a couple years off from that. But then as soon It's a little hazy, but yes, I did. I was teaching, you know, a class here and there, and then it became two classes, you know, and it just, so I did that for quite a while. So, you know, I'm lucky because my husband has a flexible schedule as a professor, and the way we always, you know, it always worked that when he had a book due or he had something due, you know, he could kind of focus and do his thing. And then when I had something, I would focus and do my thing. And we kind of have that going up through now.
Mm. And so now you've transitioned out of teaching, or are you still teaching?
Yes. Sorry. I skipped a chapter.
No, that's
but,
okay.
About 5 years ago, I decided that I wouldn't teach anymore. I love teaching, but I just wanted to devote myself full time, to kind of go out on a limb and devote myself full time to my practice. And I have been invigorated since with it. So
I love that. it just sounds, I don't know, just like imagining, you know, you having that moment of like, okay, today's my first day as a full-time artist and, you know, this is what I'm doing. And not that you weren't a full-time artist before, you know, quote unquote, but when you're juggling it with another career, as many people do, it's, you know, it's challenging. It's like another hat to put on during the day.
Yes.
So yeah, so you said about 5 years ago?
Yeah, I was actually in a residency program here in Denver, and at this organization called Redline, and we were given studios for 2 years, and there were a lot of exhibition opportunities and other kinds of opportunities to meet, you know, artists, and that's sort of what that's when I pivoted.
Mm. Awesome.
This episode of the Artist Mother Podcast is sponsored by Friendly Earrings. Friendly Earrings is a collaborative endeavor between three friends who live across the United States. They each work in different mediums while making their earrings, turning the final product into a diverse collaboration of easy-to-wear pieces made out of clay, wood, and fiber. Mary custom mixes hand colors, cuts the shapes, and bakes them out of clay. Margaret designs shapes which are then sourced from local birch by a vendor who is wheelchair bound and uses his in-home laser cutter as a way to support himself. Margaret sends her sketches in, he cuts the designs, and then she paints and assembles the earrings. Cynthia, the third artist maker in this trio, has a fiber artist background, so the earrings she creates are reminiscent of weavings. Are you someone who likes to support small businesses, especially small businesses that are women-owned? You can find these gorgeous earrings on Instagram by following Friendly Earrings or head to their Etsy page at etsy.com/shop/Friendly Earrings Co. Thank you so much, Friendly Earrings, for supporting the Artist Mother Podcast. We love your beautiful earrings, and we can't wait to see some of our community members wearing them.
Okay, so pre-COVID, could you, and then we'll talk post-COVID, or during COVID, I guess, because we're still in COVID, but
yes.
Could you tell me a little bit about what your, just kind of like what a day in the life or a week in the life looks like for you? Like, what are some of the things that you do in your studio or in your life that are part of your routine? And, you know, like, what does studio life look like for you?
There's so many different parts of it. For me, sometimes, you know, sometimes I'll dream up an idea, and then, you know, I mentioned I use a lot of found objects, and then, you know, I need to find those objects. Mm-hmm. And more often than not, though, I search for objects. So I'll go to Goodwill, or I will, you know, go to a vintage shop or something, and I find, you know, prints, or I find an object, you know, a piece of furniture that just I can see has an aura, and I want to make something with it. And sometimes I'll make something with that object that same day. You know, like I'll feel that excitement, mm-hmm. and I need to make something with that immediately. And then other times I just, you know, have things lying around my studio that I'll eye and I'll think, oh gosh, today I'm going to use that, and I'm going to do this. Or sometimes I just, you know, I mentioned painting has always been such a large part of my practice. And I'll just think today, I need to paint. But, you know, in terms of the daily life, you know, that romantic vision of the artist is coupled with laundry mm-hmm. and everything else. So, you know, it's always, they're two parts, because even when I come home, you know, we do normal things, but then sometimes I stay up and work from home. So I have a small studio at home as well.
Okay.
And sometimes I just take over my living room. So there's that too.
Yeah. I was wondering if you have if you kind of commute to a studio, or if you have some kind of detached home studio, or how that works.
Well, you know, I never had a separate studio other than in grad school until about 5 years ago.
Okay.
And right now, about a month and a half ago, I obtained this new studio that is a retail space at the bottom of a residential building. And what it is, it was given to me by developers who are working with the organization I mentioned, Redline, to basically provide artists reduced sort of studio spaces, because where we are in Denver, rents have gone up all around. Super expensive.
Yeah.
So it's kind of pushed out a lot of artists. So in the area where this nonprofit is, there used to be a lot of artists and a lot of, a whole community of artists, and a lot of people have had to leave. So the developers are working with the developers to provide these spaces. So that being said, I have a 1,250 square foot, high ceilinged,
wow,
full southern exposure, but with air conditioning studio.
Oh my gosh, that sounds
that
dreamy.
Kind of, yeah, I mean, it's just for, you know, for a while.
Yeah.
And then I'll give it up to someone else. But it's amazing, and it allows me to dream large and to see my different kinds of work communicate. And so I'm very excited by it.
Oh, that's awesome. And just to know that and see the ways that your work has expanded, you know, I'm assuming in correlation with that space, is incredible. Is the Innocence and Everything After, was all of that work made in that studio?
So, no.
Oh, okay.
I transitioned during that time.
Okay, nice.
Yeah, and actually during, this is about Resolve, but I wanted to make a large painting for that exhibit, and I didn't have a studio at the moment. So my gallerist let me work in studio, in his gallery, to make that painting.
Nice.
A very large painting. So,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, so Chitra, can you tell me a little bit about the during or post beginning of COVID life? Like, what is this craziness that we're living in, and how has it affected your life and your family, and are you doing okay? And, you know, just talk
yes,
a little bit about
it. We're doing okay.
Yeah.
I think that it's been challenging with the children, and you know, we travel a lot. That's a huge part. I didn't mention, but it's a large part of my practice as well. Mm. And, you know, we travel for my husband's work, but, you know, we accompany him, and we end up, you know, maybe living in France for a month, or, you know, doing things like that. And mm-hmm. We feel very sort of, you know, landlocked. I know that's not a real problem in a way. There are many larger problems. Of course, there's the uncertainty of the future. Will people buy art? Will people see art?
Right.
I had this exhibition during COVID. It was by appointment. And, you know, I was worried, but not worried, because I think we have to persevere.
Mm-hmm.
And in some crazy way, I think having that made me feel like things are okay in a way. Mm. Like I'm able to still be an artist in the way that I want to be an artist. I think it is challenging. I think that at first, you know, we were on lockdown, of course, and that made it very challenging. Being in a space with your partner and your children was, you know, challenging. Mm. School is challenging, homeschooling or online education. The whole thing has been, of course, there's kind of it's a strange thing to be both, you know, stressed by impending gloom and doom, and then also eternally optimistic. So there's kind of this, there's this sort of a crisis of conflict, I think, because, you know, I happened to be in Minneapolis during the protests for George Floyd. There's been a lot of, with everything going on, there's just a lot to think about and a lot to communicate about.
Yeah, there's so much to process right now.
Yeah, it's hard to even answer the question because I don't know how, you know, when we reflect on it.
Yeah. How is that influencing your studio work right now? Are you finding that you're able to focus, or is it, you know, is it feeling challenging, or are you extra motivated to make work?
I'm extra motivated.
I like that perspective.
But I don't know how long that will last, but yeah. I am extra motivated. I think more than ever, we have to make art and share art, and whatever that art is about, it doesn't matter. It's just, it's important right now.
I have a couple more questions for you and then we'll wrap this up, okay?
Okay.
Wondering about your definition of success. What do you think success means to you? And, you know, do you feel like success is something an artist should be thinking about?
So that is a complicated question.
It is. That's why I like to ask it.
No, and it's great. I think my parents were immigrant parents, very, you know, steeped in a kind of conservative approach to how one makes a livelihood. And it took me a lot of years to kind of come to my own sense of, or to find my own courage to be an artist. So for me, success is making art every day, whatever that looks like, however much that is. If I can make art every day, and if I can spend time with my family every day, and I get to travel sometimes, that is success. That's all. That's really how I see it. I don't think about tangible goals, because in the art world, you have no control over any of it. And I think sometimes it's defeating to think in those terms. But for me, if I can make art every day, that's success. So
I love that. Okay. And what about a piece of advice that you've been given, maybe by a family member, maybe by a mentor, a professor, somebody, a spouse, you know, who this advice just really stuck with you and it's something that you feel like others could maybe use?
Sure. So I read an article a couple years ago, and I'm so sad that I don't remember the artist who gave this advice. So it's advice taken from another artist. But the idea was that you shouldn't compare yourself to others. And the reason, of course, is that, you know, art making and being an artist is so individual. The process is so different for everybody. And so, you know, I used to do this a lot, sort of compare and think, boy, it's so hard. And, you know, I you know, just the idea of comparing, it really doesn't work well with being an artist, because again, it's just, everyone just makes art in a different way, lives in a different way. And like, you know, from your question about success, everyone defines success in a different way. Yeah. So I think not comparing is a really sound piece of advice.
Yes, I think that's a great piece of advice. And one that, you know, we could put on a post-it note and stick to our forehead and look at it every day.
Yeah, it's simple, but I think once one stops doing that, you have a sense of freedom.
I think so too. Okay, what are some goals that you have for your art career in the next 6 months to a year?
So, of course, COVID.
Yes, COVID is changing.
Has kind of reshaped those goals for sure. I don't set tangible goals, but one of the things that I do want to do in my practice is, you know, I've been wanting to slow down. I don't have an impending deadline in the next few months. And so I wanted to slow down and really focus on making just one work. See what that see what that would be like. With the sari tapestries, I've done that, but I haven't done that with my other sort of mixed media paintings and whatnot. So I'm really excited to just maybe make one or two things in the next 6 months.
Do you normally work on multiple things at a time? Is that what you mean? And instead you want to just kind of pick one thing
Yeah, it's more the second. I think I don't usually work on more than one thing at a time, okay. Except for the tapestries, because they're such a they take such a long time that I find myself, I can't just work on those at one time, that I basically move between a lot of different processes and a lot of different types of work. So yes and no, okay. It's just those two things. But I guess it's just a matter of maybe just slowing down with a larger scale work and seeing what happens.
I like that. Okay. And what about a goal or something that you're working towards in motherhood?
Yes. I think I'm not sure if I mentioned this already, but I find that as my children have grown older, it's a constant, kind of a goal to have them be more self-sufficient. And it's really hard. I find, it's something that one has to work towards, because they are more self-sufficient inherently, but there's so many, how do I teach them how to cook? How do I teach them? I don't want them to leave without knowing some of these things. And I suddenly feel like with the 15-year-old that he's got to leave and he's not going to know how to do anything. Yeah. So those are kind of the goals and challenges. And to keep them excited about school when, they're home and, and everything. So,
yeah, it's just interesting, because it's like we go through this, we're just trying to keep them alive, right. And then we flip the switch and suddenly we have to teach them how to keep themselves alive. It's like it never ends.
Yeah, it never ends. It never does.
Okay, Suchitra, I'm going to ask you our final five questions. I always ask everybody these questions, and we, it's just a fun way to close. So, interested to hear, who is your biggest art crush?
My biggest art crush? Well, I have so many, but I've always enjoyed the work of Eva Hesse. Mm-hmm. And I also, there's an artist by the name of Diana Al-Hadid, and she's one of my favorites as well.
Yes, love her work. I saw her work in person in Nashville last year.
Yes.
It's amazing.
At the first.
Yes, at the first.
I didn't get to see that exhibition. But
yes.
I've seen photos.
Yes. I want to reach out to her and maybe do an interview with her, because I think she's a mom.
That would be amazing.
Yeah. So thanks for reminding me.
Of course.
Okay, what is one of your favorite places to travel, or a dream trip that you'd like to go on? Obviously, outside of anywhere because of COVID, but
right.
Yeah.
So much of my life has been about trying. Through my practice, my living has been about trying to find a home, and India has always offered me one aspect of that home. And I've been there sometimes, but I would love to be able to share it more with my children.
That'd be nice. Okay. What film or book has inspired you greatly?
I've always been sort of touched and, challenged by the movie, Beautiful by Iñárritu, the director Iñárritu.
Okay, and what is your favorite meal?
There is a Caribbean form of curry that I could probably eat every day.
tell me about it. I love curry. I love Indian food, but
yes.
Yeah.
So me too.
Like, how is this different?
It's interesting, because in the Caribbean, people didn't have access to all the different spices one could have in India.
Right.
So there's kind of this, there are these sort of Caribbean curries that almost are just, you know, a curry is obviously just a mix of different spices, but there's right. a particular mix of spice that you can find in Trinidad or Guyana, and you could buy already mixed.
Oh, nice.
And it's, you know, it's very different than the curry you'd buy in the grocery store here, but it's already prepared. And so when I have, you know, a curry with that, it just reminds me of home.
Mm, nice. There's this one Indian dish that has nuts. It has cashews and raisins in it. And so it has this like sweet, it's, I think it's Shahi paneer maybe, or
yeah, actually that sounds familiar.
Yeah.
I wonder, it's a North Indian.
Is it North
delicacy.
Indian? Okay.
Yeah. Kashmiri, it sounds like.
Yeah. Like that sweet and nutty combo. I just love with like the spice, and I haven't
so
found that with the raisins a lot. So I was wondering like where it came from, because some Indian restaurants, you know, in the States have it and some don't.
So it's very much, I mean, I, you know, I'm no expert, but it's very much a North Indian delicacy.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, as is a korma.
Yes. Yeah.
And so I'm thinking Kashmiri.
Yes.
As a region.
Well, thank you for indulging my tangent.
No, of course. I'll talk about Indian food any day.
Yeah, when you were like, what, you know, you're like this special kind of curry, I'm like, tell me exactly what are all the ingredients. Like, I want to go make it right now. Oh, thank you. Okay, and last, I always like to offer just a space for you to thank somebody who supports you in your work. And of course, there's always, I know a lot of artists, there's like a million people they want to give a shout out to, but this is with the understanding that there's lots of people on your side, but maybe there's one
yes.
or two that you just want to share a thank you to.
Oh, totally. No, I mean, I think I would be remiss if I didn't thank my husband, Adam, yeah. for his support, because I couldn't have done any of this without him. So, and of course my children who give me inspiration and the rest of my family, but you know, also I have an amazing assistant, Wyatt, and a wonderful gallerist, Doug, and you know, just countless curators and wonderful people I've worked with. So
That's great. Okay. Where can people find more about you and your work? Are you on Instagram, website? What's all that?
So yes. So I have a website, which is just my name, suchitramatai.com. And I have an Instagram, suchitramatai art. And those are the two places where you can pretty much find all of my materials.
Great. So Chitra, thank you so much for spending time with me and sharing a bit about your life and your work.
Thank you so much for having me. So much.
Yes,
thanks.
I appreciate it. The Artist Mother podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. Please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.